Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining me this evening on New Jersey Revolution Radio, our Wednesday night live stream. We come here every Wednesday night onto Facebook, and we chat with a comrade. We meet a new comrade. We have panels. We do all kinds of things here on New Jersey Revolution Radio around New Jersey anti-capitalist and activist work. Part of that is third-party support, and we will give platforms to candidates that the mainstream media just doesn't pay as much attention to, although we have seen some articles on the Green Party recently, right, which is a nice surprise, but certainly nowhere the dedication we have here on NJRR to the anti-capitalist candidates in these races. I'd like to point everybody's attention to our website. We just added a new feature. You got to check it out. I did this over the weekend, and I'm so proud of it. You know, we are a small operation here at NJRR. I do a lot of the website work myself, and I put up a calendar so you can see what shows are coming up, what guests we're going to have. And if you're out there and you have an activist organization, we're going to keep it nonpartisan, Madeline. I'm sorry, so we can't have you, your events on there. But if it's a cause or an issue-based or a coalition-based thing, then certainly let us at NJR know. Please put this on my calendar. And as long as you're anti-racist and anti-capitalist, we will support you. I promise that. Without further ado, tonight we're going to be talking to my comrade, candidate for Senate in the United States Senate out of New Jersey as a Green Party candidate, Madeline Hoffman. Madeline, thanks for joining me tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, Brian. It's been a little while, and there's a lot to catch up on, a lot to go over.
Certainly.
I'm glad to be here. Yes.
Yeah, certainly. It's been, I know you've been busy, and I've been busy with you, right? I mean, the Greens, as people know, I'm on the Green Executive Council, and I'm serving interim elections chair right now. So I've been involved with both of the big campaigns, the statewide races, both you and Diane Moxley. It's been interesting to see the reaction of some of the new people on these campaigns. It's been fun to see the reinvigoration of some older Greens on these campaigns. There's been challenges, but we're rolling along. I'm learning stuff. How are you doing? What is your experience so far into the campaign been?
Well, I've been extremely busy, which is to be expected, I guess, although it wasn't necessarily going to be that way. You never know with Green Party campaigns or third party campaigns. But I've been answering all kinds of candidate questionnaires, from New Jersey Now to the Disabled Communities questionnaire, to the DSA's questionnaire, the Democratic Socialists of America, I think that's about it right now. And then taking different pledges, like there's one that I have to do tonight, that goes, you take a photo of yourself signing a pledge saying that we need to move off of fossil fuel.
Right.
As possible, no fossil fuels. And then the other one that I did already do is no NRA money, you know, pledge to take no NRA money, which is a no-brainer for a Green Party candidate, because we don't take any money from corporations anyway or the big lobbies, but it's still good to go on the record formally and officially saying that we will not take any NRA money and off of fossil fuels immediately, if not sooner. And so all those kinds of things that candidates do, those things are kind of, some of them are a little challenging because you want to answer the questions accurately and carefully.
Right.
It's a little frustrating sometimes because third parties like ours will fill those in, but the Democrats and Republicans don't feel like they need to do it. They don't want to go on the record to say anything about where they stand on the issues, but it's still important for us to have to get our word out there and to answer those questions.
Yeah.
So that's you know, part of what a campaign does. It's relatively easy to do. To do it in the quiet of your own, you know, of your apartment at any hour of the day or night. But then there's some other things that have been a little bit more challenging, because we have people, we have volunteers. I just got a friend interested in volunteering to do my Instagram page.
Oh, good.
And she's gonna, I think she'll help Diane also. So, you know, there's that, but there's also just trying to craft this message in a way. You mentioned that we've been getting some good press recently.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you were talking, I assume you were talking about the New York Times.
Yeah, that was a great article that I think was honest and fair, which is you don't see much of in the mainstream media. No. Nice to see.
Yeah, there were five or six of us from New Jersey, five, I guess, at the annual national meeting of the Greens in Salt Lake City, Utah. And the New York Times was there for several days, and they were taking pictures, they had a reporter who was interviewing various candidates. And it said something about some 224 or so Green Party candidates this year. So that was extremely exciting to see that there were all these, many candidates. And there in Utah alone, there were maybe 20 or 25 of the candidates who were attending that. So it's inspirational, but it also, for me, it posed a challenge in terms of what my message, how to shape my message a little bit more pointedly, because I've been working in the nonprofit world now for almost 20 years, exactly 20 years since the last time I ran for political office. And today's world, you can use the word socialism and people like it.
Used to that?
No. 20 years ago, I had to keep, words like socialism and communism under my hat.
Loud and proud, sister, loud and proud.
Yes, so now I've got to start to not only talk about the issues, but bring those words and those ideologies, information about them into the discussion, because I think if you read the New York Times article today, it really, because of people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York, and some other people who have been using a much more progressive message, get elected in the primary and then backing off it once they're elected into the Democratic Party primary. Words like socialism are buzzwords now for the media, and
it's exciting.
It is exciting. Yes, and so. My message I've never used it in those words in my message. As an organizer for almost 40 years, as a candidate, never used them.
Right.
So
that's and how does it feel? So let's ask, so you consider yourself a socialist? What do you consider yourself as far as political ideology?
My political ideology ranges from socialism to communism. Somewhere it's to know exactly where it is. I'm not 100% sure, but socialism for sure, right. And then probably beyond that. But
well, that's the goal, right? Yeah. Oh no, you're not liberal. No.
I might have been when I ran 20 years ago, but I'm not.
We all politically develop, and you did, we talked a little bit before, off the air, about coming back into this party situation, this political situation, right, where you've been this advocate for a great issue, peace, right, but it is kind of a myopic drive, right? You have this goal of peace, you're opposed to war, but now you're thrown into this larger political spectrum where a lot of other issues, where you may not have the expertise, but you have people around you in the party that are educating you, and we're all kind of growing politically together. Where have you found that to be a challenge? Is it easy? Do you need more support? Are you getting the support that you need? How have you been developing that other thought, if you will?
Well, I mean, the good news is that there are a lot of people around the state who are connected to the Greens in some way, who are actually doing work on some of these very important issues. For example, the folks in Camden are working to try to prevent private takeover of public schools. And at the Green Party meeting in Utah, I met someone from he's now living in Youngstown, Ohio, right. But from New Jersey originally, and he's a self-proclaimed Green. He's a member of the Green Party, and he's been fighting. He put together a PowerPoint presentation about how to fight back against private takeover of public schools. And I'm trying to arrange for him to come to Camden to help to work with the Camden County Greens because they're taking on a massive challenge with that. So I developed quite an education, a platform on education because of the Badass Teachers Association.
Yeah.
And so when I went to the national meeting, I immediately said, oh, this is a workshop on local control of public schools. I'm going to it because I already had the information in my head. So that's one. Right. In the city of Newark, there are the people who ran for council, city council in May, the AMP group, a movement for the people. Yes. They've been fighting to have a universal rent control, affordable housing, taking care of homeless, and also keeping the homeless shelter open, and also trying to prevent gentrification. There are high-rise buildings in Newark where there are big private developers who are coming in trying to push people out. So I went to a rent control hearing.
I got to plug AMP too. They didn't slow down, by the way. They ran a campaign for city council, and I think they maybe take a few hours off and like threw back some Gatorade and just got right back to work organizing their community. And I just got to give them a shout out to how impressive they are and how proud we are to have them call themselves Greens. But thank you, Madeline. Please, I didn't mean to interrupt your train of thought. They deserve that.
That's fine. That's fine because you know, I've been learning about the housing issue there in Newark, and my challenge is to then take those issues in Newark and connect them to Trenton, to Camden, to all of the places in New Jersey where that same thing is occurring, where wealthy private developers are pushing people out of affordable housing. And so I need to get even more of an education about what's happening statewide with that so that, yes, I am working with the folks in Newark, and yes, I'm working with the folks in Camden. But if you, one of the people I met in Utah was Kenneth Mejia. He's from the East LA section of California, and he's running for Congress. He's actually running against a Democrat. There's no Republican opposition. And he calls for universal rent control. And that's something that's part of my platform, or at least inside my head, part of my platform. But I'm not 100% sure what of all the details of universal rent control. So that's another issue where I'm definitely moving in the right direction. But need a little more expertise and more connections. But the fact that there are people already working on those issues really makes the difference.
Yes.
And that's how this campaign, the only way this campaign can take off.
I want to ask a question because, you know, we do have people on for all to say, both you and I organized on a statewide level before. And you do see these issues because of the neoliberal establishment using this model of gentrification, this model of tax subsidies to corporations. These are all models being implemented. And when we talk about our urban centers, being implemented, is there other activists that are connecting these issues on a statewide level? What groups are doing that? And is there anything specific to housing that people are connecting on so that, you know, these informations can be shared between people in similar communities? Do you see that as your role campaigning right now?
What's that?
Do you see that as something you're doing by campaigning right now, right?
You got it right there. That's the key because I know that there are groups. I think there's a group. I know there's a group called the Affordable Housing Coalition, and there are other nonprofits that are working on these issues. But unfortunately, as we from my own experience in the nonprofit world, I know that a lot of it goes only as far as the Democratic Party is going to go. So that it's they're doing good things. I don't want to discount the work that's being done, but my campaign is different in the sense that I want to build that kind of interconnection between all the groups working on housing, but then between the groups working on housing, and then the union people, the pro-union, pro-labor people, the pro-local control of public education. And the way I can do it, oh, and the Medicare for All people also.
Right, yeah, that's a great coalition there.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, all those issues connect. And this is what this is part of my challenge, I think. Like, they all connect around the fact that $717 billion every year is being spent on war and the military, right. And that money is coming straight out of our communities, straight out of education, straight out of public transportation,
absolutely,
straight out of healthcare, straight out of affordable housing, you name it.
Yeah. So, with housing in particular, you know, you have a lot of developer money, and when you have a political system that revolves around money and developers have the money, then by nature, our housing, you know, these establishment organizations are going to lean into Democratic Party politics. I just look at the money. I mean, when you start, especially when you look at local races, city councils and stuff like that, is basically developers funding the entire operation, you know, the political operation in these smaller communities. So absent the presence of developer money here in the Green Party and through a lot of our comrades around the state who may not be Greens, but are certainly not part of the establishment, right. You know, I think it's important to build that kind of network. So I'm glad you're, you know, doing that work. I think it's important work, and I hope people latch on to that, regardless of how they vote, to be honest with you. You know, we want their vote, obviously, right. But, you know, the base building and the grassroots stuff that the Green Party is doing right now is exciting work, and it's done without corporate executives in the room, right?
Right, and then there's also the ICE work, the abolish ICE work,
yeah.
and the focus on creating a pathway to citizenship for the immigrant community, and certainly the pathway, a pathway away from brutalizing and terrorizing immigrant or migrant families when they're coming across the border. And, you know, at one of the presentations I made at the Essex County Freeholder meeting about 3 weeks ago, all of this started to come together for me, in the sense that because you hear people say, this isn't America. These aren't American values.
It's America. What fucking country they've been living in?
Right. So then I started to think about the slavery and the breaking up of,
right,
families. I mean, that's the worst example I can think of. Then Native Americans in Utah, again, at the annual national meeting, right. We saw a movie called Dawnland, which... Okay. Focused on the 1930s program of the U.S. government to take Native American kids away from their parents and families, to, you know, de-savagize them, if that's even a word,
oh, God.
Christianize
yeah.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, in Maine, the last number of years, there's been the U.S.'s first Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where... there was an attempt to have Native American residents of Maine, now many in their 60s, let's say, talk about how brutal that was for them when they were growing up. And, right. You know, the trauma of that experience for Native Americans continues today, and many didn't even want to talk about it.
Mm.
And they weren't trusting of any who were not Native American to really listen to their story. So you've got slavery, you've got breaking up of Native American families, that police brutality issues where mm-hmm. African American families today are broken up, and police get away with murder, literally. And then you have the situation at the border. So this is the country we've been living in.
Yes.
And you know, it's important for the campaign to, I feel it's important for my campaign to make all those connections.
I've been honest about my own personal struggles with mental disorders and stuff, and you have to recognize a problem before you can fix it. And that, it's just a rule, because if you don't see something as a problem, then what do you want to do about no problem? You have to first see it as a problem, and I think America has to see racism as a problem, and we're not there yet, especially considering, you know, that we defend some of these institutions. There's no defending the separation of children from the parents. And, you know, I'll just, you know, I know you're talking about policy and stuff. My policy has been pretty simple. Let them in. If they're hungry, give them food. If they need a house, there's plenty of foreclosed shit around here. Give it to them, you know, and if they want to have a job, then help them find a job. I mean, it's pretty easy. Just treat them like people. I don't know why we need to have any kind of different policy for people based on where they were born. I was born in a place where some white dude drew some lines and said I get certain rights, and I don't really give a shit about any of that. I don't think we should.
Well, yeah, and then it's not, I mean, one of the things that's a challenge today also is that the work that I'm doing or that we're doing is not simply, it's not partisan, and it's not, you know, saying, oh, Trump this, Trump that, Trump the other thing, so we've got to vote in Democrats. It's more Democrats and Republicans alike have been guilty of all these things. And so we're trying to create a different kind of policy, a different kind of world. And yeah, we have to recognize the problem before we can fix it. We have to recognize too that we're, you know, that we've intervened in the elections of dozens of countries around the world in the 200 plus years of our existence. We've invaded countries all around the world, continue to invade them. So we are a militaristic country instead of that sort of mythologized, Chris Hedges calls it a mythology of, oh, well, we only use war as a last resort, haha.
Yeah, right. And not in my adult lifetime. You know, not as far as I've been following politics since high school, and I'm 41, and I've always seen war as a preferred option, of this government. Working, nationally and locally here, I'm going to ask you, what's the biggest important domestic issue? And then I want to talk a little bit about some history, on a foreign issue, but domestically, when you're on the campaign trail and you meet the unaffiliated voters, the independent people, the not lefty, the regular average New Jerseyite, I think we're New Jerseyites, I believe that's the correct term.
Yes, it is.
In New Jersey, you meet your average everyday New Jerseyite. What topic do you find pops up the most?
That's a good question. I would just think the economy and how expensive things are to live, how expensive it is to live here, how hard people are working without getting enough back. That, and also definitely student loans, people have to pay back for their college education, if they even were able to get one. You know, the debt that they're in from whatever, but mostly from student loans, the housing crisis, the inability to find affordable housing, and then just economically having enough money, so the minimum wage becomes an issue too. How much should people be making per hour? You know, an increase in the minimum wage to $15 is one thing for sure, but then there's a lot of discussion about how even that isn't enough. Oh, and then I got to add healthcare into that mix also.
Yeah.
The cost of healthcare is just astronomical for most people.
It is crazy, and something's got to be done about it. The anniversary that we've been discussing, the event that you celebrated every year with Peace Action when you're with them, has that come and gone, or are we coming up on it?
No, No, we're coming up on the, let's see, it was 70 years in 2015. That's when I was lucky enough to be invited to Japan by the New Japan Women's Association. That was the 70th year after the U.S. had dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The dates are August 6th and August 9th. August 6th, Hiroshima, and August 9th, Nagasaki. I still would like to, I tried to get someone from Japan and Korea to join me today. I may still try to do that.
Yeah. Well, we'll just have to have you back on.
Yeah. So on August 6th. But that, you know, walking through the streets of Hiroshima and Nagasaki 70 years later, hearing the stories, I've listened to survivors of the atomic bombings speak about their experiences, and it galls me no end when I hear people just sort of cavalierly say, oh yeah, nuke them all. Because people don't understand, not enough people understand what that really means and how destructive that really is. And so we really need to cool tensions between the United States and Russia. We need to cool tensions between the United States and China. We need to cool tensions between the United States and Iran, even though Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons. But there's a reason why we need to have things calm. And that's another challenge of running for office today is, you know, when you say we don't need we shouldn't have nuclear weapons, or, yeah, you know, it's good that I'm glad to see the president of the United States and the president of Russia talking to one another. Well, the backlash from saying something as simple as that right now, the backlash is really strong because, well, you know, the Russians are interfering in everything about American society and culture today. And that's scary because, I mean, not that they're doing that. No, what's scary is that curtain of, that wall of anti-Russian propaganda makes it more difficult for peace activists who are against nuclear weapons, for example.
Yeah.
Just say that. Look, I don't know that Trump is capable of negotiating. I don't know if Putin is capable, but they're certainly not capable of negotiations if they're not talking to each other. And so
I agree with you completely. So we want to make sure that when we get you in the Senate, you have some solutions.
Yes.
What steps can you take if you get into office? If we can turn this state a little more green, we get you the votes. What does it mean having for the country and for the world having Madeleine Hoffman as a senator?
Well, that's a great question, and I think first and foremost, I would represent the needs of working people, whether they be in terms of minimum wage or maximum wage or, you know, the income disparity between the executives and the workers, unions, etc. I would definitely be there for everybody and representing what everybody needs there. I would be pushing for healthcare for all. I wouldn't give in at the first sign of disagreement from some of the insurance industry people, for example. And then, honestly, since the last 20 years, I've been so focused on war and peace issues. There would be a lot that I would bring on that. I've been starting this Twitter campaign, and I really could use more help with it. People need to go to follow me on Twitter, which is Hoffman, the number 4, capital letters US, 2018. Because for one thing, the United States is one of the world's leaders, if not the world's leader, in arms sales. And we are selling arms to Yemen. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to Yemen, Saudi Arabia. Like, it's going out of style, and Saudi Arabia is using those arms, weapons against Yemen. And day after day after day after day. And Senator Menendez says he needs more information before he can decide whether the U.S. should stop selling weapons to Saudi Arabia. Mm. And I say, what information do you need? The country's on the verge of collapse. Famine is spreading. It's doing nobody any good to keep bombing Yemen. So that's one thing. Palestine is another. I know you had John Gordon on last week. And we're actually involved in bringing this woman named Ida Tuman into New Jersey. She's an Arab member of the Israeli Knesset, and she and some of her colleagues walked out last week or the week before.
Yeah.
When the Knesset voted to make Israel into a Jewish state, formalize its apartheid.
Yes. We have some time, and I don't think I dug into that enough with John. Would you mind spending a few minutes explaining what's going on over there? Because maybe not everybody's heard, or I know it's been big news in the activist community, but I think the more we mention it, the better, right? Can you tell people what's going on in Israel with this recent law?
Yeah, the best that I can say, because I'm sure there's a lot of details that I don't know about, but I've actually been reading articles in Arabic because I'm studying Arabic and have been for the last 3 years or so. So I got a little bit of an education on it. Israel is already, I mean, when I visited it, it's definitely already separated. There are walls in many places to keep the Palestinians away from the Israelis. But this law went a step further. It formalized the apartheid. It's making Israel into a Jewish state formally, which means their Jewish folks have primary citizenship rights, and everybody else is a second-class citizen.
Wow.
And for 70 years, both Hebrew and Arabic have been official languages of Israel. Arabic was dropped from the official language.
So it's not a matter of making an official language, but it's actually a matter of getting rid of an official language. That is horrifying. That's destroying somebody's culture.
Exactly. It's trying to erase it from the history books. And that coupled with what was done a few months ago, moving the U.S. Embassy into Jerusalem and declaring Jerusalem the capital of a Jewish state, of the Jewish state of Israel. You put that together with this new law, and it's going to make things even more difficult. There are Druze in Israel, they're second-class citizens, Bedouins. I mean, it's not like they weren't second-class citizens or treated like second-class citizens before, but this now gives the Israeli government the power of the law.
I want to draw a comparison because, you know, there's this horrible group of people, ISIS, out there. They do horrible things. And I remember it big on the news when they were destroying Buddhist statues. And broadcasting, right? We freaked out in America about these horrible terrorists erasing this beautiful culture.
Right.
But yet here, Israel is doing, in my mind, the exact same thing. And yet we don't hear it portrayed that way in America. But I see no difference between that and destroying somebody, trying to remove somebody's language from a region that they've inhabited for thousands of years. That everybody should be terrified of that. Everybody.
Yeah, and as I understood
it,
there was a big event in Israel or Palestine, I believe in Israel, though, just within the last couple of days, a mega Arabic class
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that nice? And that was inspiring to see, right? I mean, I did, that warmed my heart a little bit to see that there is reaction like that out there. And I know we'll be working here to raise awareness where we can. It's terrible.
Well, it is terrible. And the incumbent I'm running against, Senator Menendez, one of the reasons I'm running against him is that he's, I don't know how to put it, but basically anything Israel wants, Israel gets, yes, from Senator Menendez. And whether that means aid, military aid for what they're doing currently, or whether that means to oppose the Iran deal of several years ago, mm-hmm, because Israel doesn't want that, they,
right,
or if it means whatever Israel's policy wants to be towards Syria or Iraq or Iran or any of the Arab countries or Muslim countries, Senator Menendez is lined up behind them. And so, yeah, if I were elected senator, I know it would be an uphill fight, and I know I would be a lone voice, but somebody has to take a stand and start to turn that around. And if people want to hear more about what this law actually means, we, on August 20th, which is a Monday, at the firehouse in Montclair, the on Pine Street, from 7 to 9, this member of the Israeli Knesset will come to speak. Oh, and that reminds me, too, of the other issue that, her name is Ida Tumon, and she's speaking that night in Montclair, August 20th.
Yes.
But the other part of this law, and she's going to be, you know, she's got to be careful. The other part of this law is to make it illegal, if you live in Israel, to support the BDS movement, to support boycott, divest, and sanction, or to associate with people who support boycott, divest, and sanction.
Well, that could mean a lot. We associate with people. If I'm Facebook friends with somebody who supports BDS, I could be breaking the law.
Yeah. We all know guilt by association stuff in this country.
Jesus Christ, that takes it to a pretty insane level, even for Israel.
Yeah, so we all know where that could lead, and so it's a little bit, it's very scary. Mm-hmm. And if I were elected to the U.S. Senate, that's something that I would address right away.
Wonderful.
This is again why I really would like people to follow me on Twitter. Because I've been trying to do these Twitter campaigns, mm-hmm, that say at Bob Menendez NJ. They're directed to Senator Menendez with at Bob Menendez NJ. And they say, what more information do you need to oppose selling U.S. arms to Saudi Arabia? Mm-hmm. Or what do you think of this new apartheid law in Israel? Or anything along those lines, it will come down to, hopefully it will not come down to, what do you think about a war against Iran? But I need people to stand alongside me with all of this. So many of us are kind of bemoaning the fact that the peace movement is not as active as a lot of these other movements are.
Right.
Like in 2003, tons of buses were going down to D.C. to oppose war. Now, you know, it's really hard. It's harder to organize. Diane Moxley and I were just added to planning committee for this march on the Pentagon, Women's March on the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. We all remember, some of us may remember Cindy Sheehan.
Yes.
On October 21st, there's going to be a march and rally at the Pentagon trying to reinvigorate the anti-war.
I certainly need it.
It's very much needed.
Yeah.
What I'm doing on Twitter or Facebook is nothing compared to standing in front of the Pentagon. But if it starts to take some momentum, And every day, every other day or twice a week, there's 30 tweets directed at Bob Menendez about one of these issues, whether it's ICE or whether, you know, whether it's Yemen or Iran, right. Israel. It's going to, I would think it would start to make a difference.
I hope so. Yeah, I really hope so. And you know, if you're out there and you're listening to this again, you know, we said we'd love for you to vote for our comrade. But if you don't, you could still help her give a voice to peace. You know, and I'm the father of five young boys, and my one son is 18 years old, and I can't stand the thought of them having or considering going off to war. You know, my 9-year old talks every once in a while that he wants to go into the army. Now he's a kid, but that scares the hell out of me. And you know, as parents out there, as activists out there, as just regular everyday working people who are footing the bill for 800 military bases to slaughter people for profit, is that really who we want to be as a country? And I hope it's not. I just hope, I mean, I don't hope. I'd like to think that it's apathy. I'd like to think that it's people not really paying attention and not understanding what this country does to maintain our power and our standing in the world. It's unethical. It's immoral. And if we really understood it, maybe we'd be standing up to it more. This is your chance. The Hoffman campaign is giving you a little bit of a vehicle here that can combine with electoral politics. Sure, we want her in the Senate to do real things, but latching onto this message is important no matter who you are. I don't care what your politics are. You know, you don't have to be a communist to support peace.
Well, no.
I'd like you to be, but... I'd like you to be, but well, you don't. This is serious.
This should be a nonpartisan issue, and really, it's one of the few issues.
It is. It is a nonpartisan issue. Both Democrats and Republicans support war just fine.
That's exactly where I was going with that.
Oh, I'm sorry, I cut you off. I stole your thunder. My bad.
Better coming from you than from me. But as we approach August 6th and August 9th, going back to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I heard a lot when I was working for peace that, oh, well, the United States is the only, the United States will use nuclear weapons responsibly. So,
sure,
we will. And yet, we're the only country to ever have used a nuclear weapon. We killed 210,000 people instantaneously in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We tried to cover that, the effects and consequences, up. It wasn't until the late 1950s, more than 10 years later, that information about what had happened started to come out more, you know, more freely. People knew what was going on. And again, you know, it's if when we hit August 6th and we hit August 9th, the idea is to honor those who lost their lives instantaneously and then beyond, because there's still effects from the radiation occurring to, I guess they're the grandkids of the survivors, because the average age of a survivor is the mid-80s now.
Yeah, I bet.
We also have to. We also need to take to think about all the victims of war, whether they are in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq.
Absolutely.
And the wars at home. I mean, we spent the first half talking about the wars at home. So
yeah,
it's time. A really sobering day. It's an anniversary coming up.
It should be.
Love to have people follow me on Twitter, visit my website, hoffmanforhouse.com. On Facebook, I got a whole barrage of people liking my page today. I think they were concerned. Yeah, I think they were people concerned about what's happening in Yemen. And so they will help push the Twitter campaign, I hope. And also mark your calendar, because on September 15th in Toms River, in the plaza by the Ocean County Library, we're going to be holding a March for Peace and the Wars rally.
Cool. Well, now that's nonpartisan, so we can throw that up on the calendar, right?
Yes.
Make sure we'll get the details on that. And I did post a few links in this chat thread so that people can find your Twitter feed and your Facebook feed and your website and stuff like that. So, you know, and if there's more links that people need to go to, just feel free to post them in there after we're done. And we'll get them up with the show notes as well. We went a little long tonight, but it was a good discussion. So I was hanging out with my comrade. It's been a while. I'm glad to spend the time, but we do have to wrap things up. Any last thoughts before we go?
Well, let's put it this way. I've been, like I said earlier, I've been busy in July and now we're in August, but it's nothing to compare to what's going to happen in September. So volunteers, 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 donations, donations. I have a CrowdPack page now. Oh, and that was interesting because somebody from CrowdPack called me and said I should add to my category, my tags, women in politics.
All right.
Because they're trying to get a trending, there are more women running for office now than.
That's great.
Yeah, so. I need your help. I need your help. We can make a strong campaign even stronger. And so if you visit any one of the links that Brian posted, please give us your contact info. Make a donation. Help me canvass.
Yeah. Help me,
you know, you guys did a great canvas.
We had fun. Beautiful day to talk to the people of Garwood.
Yeah. And help our two Green Party women make a real big impact in New Jersey this year.
We get tons of positive response out there when we do it, and it's good community organizing type work, and I really enjoy going out there and standing up for Green Party because it's a great organization, and we got great candidates like yourself and Diane. I'm real proud of it. If you like what we do here at New Jersey Revolution Radio, we sure could use your support. So go ahead and give my comrades a little money, but give New Jersey Revolution a little money too. You can go to the donate link, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, and I just put in the comments, our revolutionary calendar is up. It's got some upcoming shows in it. But if your organization, nonpartisan, activist, anti-capitalist, anti-racist, wants to stick something on our calendar so people know what's going on around the state of New Jersey as far as activism goes, we're going to start populating that calendar more and more in the coming days and weeks and months and years, hopefully. Madeline, thank you very much for joining me tonight. I appreciate it.
Brian, thank you so much. I'm glad to be on tonight.
Have a good night, everybody.